Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. Akiva, how are you today?
Oh, I'm so good. I've been waiting with bated breath, like all the fans, to finish this coach ranking.
Yeah, well, last week we discussed the coaches ranked 32 to 17. And so this week we're going to discuss coaches 16 to 1, the top half. And we'll start with number 16. And I got to say, we're pretty lucky that the Colts beat the Broncos on Sunday, because had they lost, there was a very strong chance that Chuck Pagano would have lost his job. And then we would have looked silly having Pagano as a above average NFL head coach in 2015.
Yeah. And it's worth mentioning that two of our fire immediately coaches were fired after we made this list. So we're having an impact.
Yeah, we are. I think that's true. I think that NFL front offices are listening to this podcast and they're taking cues. But let's talk about Pagano for a second. He's a guy who, coming into the year, you and I both definitely liked him. And we were both definitely on the side of all the Colts problems. And you especially, you know, I thought that Luck was a bit overrated. You thought the team after Luck was a mediocre team. But we really blamed it all on Gregson. We said Gregson is an incompetent, GM. But Pagano's a good coach. And he's certainly a nice guy and everybody likes him. The national perspective on Pagano has really shifted in the first couple of months of this season, where a lot of people are thinking, well, maybe he's part of the problem also, and he makes bad decisions, and, you know, he's supposed to be a defensive guy, and the defense is in shambles, and the offense isn't any good either, and maybe he deserves to lose his job as well as Gregson. You know, he seemed to be throwing not only his front office, but his players under the bus on several occasions. So I actually lowered him a little bit, but I still had him somewhat decently in my rankings. I had him at number 19, but you had him at 12, and he's going to keep his job now, probably for the rest of the season. But do you think he's still a good coach, or do you think he's sort of mediocre?
Yeah, I mean, if we thought he was good 2 months ago, then I don't know what makes him a bad coach now. You know,
well, I think it's that we have a somewhat limited perspective on how much of an impact a coach has versus, you know, for the Colts, maybe the reason they did well the last couple of years was because of their great quarterback and their easy schedule.
Okay, but the Chargers are 2-7 and they have a good quarterback. Like, not every team with a good quarterback automatically goes 11-5 every year. And that's what Pagano's done every single year he's been on the Colts. They've gone 11-5 three straight times. And then obviously, to do that a fourth time.
Yeah, and I think the first year we have to give credit to Bruce Arians.
I don't know if those wins count as his. I think officially they are.
Officially, they're Pagano's, yeah. But practically speaking, I think Arians, especially what he's done in Arizona, he's shown that he is an elite coach.
Sure, but listen, he's certainly shown that he's a competent coach. He's definitely going to get another job in the league if he gets fired at the end of the season, which seems very likely. I think that we're just we're a lot of Johnny come latelys who think that, like, oh, they're struggling this year. Any coach in the league, like Belichick, wouldn't be more than 5-3 with this team. It's not a good team, and Luck is injured, and, I'm much higher in Luck than you are, but whatever you have to say, like, he hasn't been himself this season, so if you don't have Luck, you have nothing on this team. The 8,000-year-old offensive players, Gore and Johnson and all those guys, Ahmad Bradshaw, like, guys that are falling off the scrap heap, those are the missing pieces, maybe, for, like, playing a few snaps a game for a championship team. Those are the guys they're relying on to, like, win them games now. They're not playing with anybody. Their team stinks. I don't blame Pagano at all.
Well, so you think that he's definitely gone at the end of the year. We know that they're definitely
If he wins the division.
Well, okay, they're definitely going to win the division.
And wins that 4-5 playoff game. Yeah. Don't say definitely.
All right, Akiva. We are cutting in from our previously recorded podcast. We were talking about Chuck Pagano and the Colts. And we ran through their schedule and predicted they would end up 8-8. And that was before we discovered the news that Andrew Luck is out for 2 to 6 weeks with a lacerated kidney and abdominal tear.
Didn't I say when we were talking about Luck, like, what if he gets injured again?
Yeah, and it's funny because Luck was just traded to Superfan Robbie, actually, in our fantasy football league. And I asked the guy who did it why he did it. He traded him for Marcus Mariota, and he said, oh, I want to get rid of Luck before he gets injured. And I thought, well, that was kind of dumb, but not so dumb, I guess.
Maybe he had inside info, and it's really mean, and, like, he should be kicked out of your league.
Yeah. All right. So now we got to redo that prediction. 4-5. We said they lose to the Falcons 4-6, right?
Yeah.
You had them.
I don't know. Peter King said that they're the best backup. He's the best backup in the league.
Who, Hasselbeck?
Yeah.
Tampa Bay, I still think they're going to win, but it's a close game. That would be 5-6. They're going to lose at Pittsburgh. That's 5-7. They still have Jacksonville, Houston, Tennessee. They still have three divisional games, and they already won two of those with Hasselbeck. So I don't know. Maybe they go 7-9 now. Maybe they go 6-10. Do we see a 6-10 division winner? Is that a possibility?
And we almost had it with the NFC West a few years ago.
Yeah.
We've had 7-9. I don't think we see a 6-10 division winner.
So
I think someone gets the 7 there.
Is it the Colts, though?
Yeah, I think the Colts probably still get to 7 or 8.
8. Oh, still 8. Oh, so you don't even think that losing him is a big loss?
Well, not when he's playing the way he's playing. I think Hasselbeck is decent enough to make them solid favorites against the AFC South teams and any other bad team they play.
Yeah, well, the AFC South teams, you know, they're playing at Jacksonville. I don't know if with Hasselbeck if they'd be favored in Jacksonville. Now, but that's mid-December, so he might be back by then. They said 2 to 6 weeks. That's a wide range.
It's a wide range, especially since they have a bye this week, right? So
yeah, so let's put on hold discussing the Colts and Luck, his injury too much until we, you know, after Thanksgiving, hopefully we'll get a better idea of what his timeline is.
I mean, what was it, like a lacerated kidney or something? That sounds serious.
Yeah, I think that's what Keenan Allen had.
I feel like the blood of his kidney is on Ryan Grigson, who doesn't get him people who can block. Like, when was the last time, you know, Brady tore his ACL on a fluke accident, but he's never hurt. When was the last time, you know, that Brady lacerated his kidney?
As a Keenan Allen fantasy owner, I want to know why Keenan Allen lacerates his kidney. He's gone for the year. Andrew Luck lacerates his kidney and he can come back.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Also, don't these guys have second kidneys? Isn't that the whole point of kidney donors?
Why don't you just get rid of, if you were a real man, you'd get rid of your kidney.
Well, maybe that's what Luck's doing. Maybe he's taking it out and it's like 2 weeks of recovery.
Can you, but like, if you have a lacerated kidney, could they take it out, stitch it up, and then like give it to someone? And then not only are you fine, but you can, you know, you're also doing like a good deed in the process. You're giving someone your kidney.
Well, why would anybody want your lacerated kidney? Don't they want?
Well, they're stitching it up. And second of all, Andrew Luck is like a super athlete. Like, his lacerated kidney is better than your piece of crap kidney. Yeah. No question.
Yeah. We need to bring in our medical consultant for this one. Who's the medical consultant on your other podcast?
Well, your wife is one of them.
Oh, it's my wife.
And no, I had Thomas from Australia.
Oh, Thomas from Australia. You think he's a big NFL fan?
That's a good question. I don't know.
All right, Thomas, if you're listening, get back to us on what to do when you have a lacerated kidney.
I have to like make a chart. We have so many correspondents on this show. We got a bunch more. I really have to like make a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that other podcast.
Yeah.
This is the big week. Marine biologist. When you started this podcast a couple of years ago, you said to me, what's your favorite episode of Seinfeld? I said, Marine Biologist. You said, all right, when we get to that episode, you're going to come on as a guest. Now you're trying to back out.
No, I'm not trying. I backed out.
Well, what do you back out?
You could
out?
Do it's another official? One. You could. Oh, I mean, you're not doing the podcast tomorrow. That's official.
Why?
Well, first of all, it's the Marine Biologist. I feel like, why are we bringing a random guest? We should bring you in for like a bad episode as like a pitch. Rob's wife could go into labor any minute at this point. I don't want to like stress him out with something with another guest.
I don't think it's really that much stress. I think you should at least ask. Give him the chance to sit
down. I'm not even going to ask.
But does Rob listen to our podcast? Because if he does, he's going to hear this. And then he's going to say to you, hey, Akiva, why did you say Alex couldn't be on the podcast?
He's going to be like, good call. He's good call not having Chester.
No, you're being an Indian, a person who gives a gift and then takes back a gift. Yeah. I'm not familiar with the term.
I know. I'm giving the gift. I'll let you on in some point in season 6, just not right now.
No, but that's a specific. You already gave me a gift, and now you're taking it back, and you're going to say you're going to give me another gift.
What about the Chinese woman? Do you like the Jimmy? That's probably my favorite in season 6.
Yeah, the Jimmy is great.
Big salad. You like a big salad?
What is it? It's just a salad with more stuff in it.
Salad with more. What about the couch? The oil of the couch episode.
I mean, I do like Poppy, and I do have strong opinions about abortion. By the way, in the couch.
That's what I want. What your strong abortion opinion?
I'm joking about that.
But you know what? Forget it. You could do highlights of 100.
Hold on. In the couch, and this drives me nuts.
Wait, are we posting this? I prefer not to. Are we posting this?
I'm going to have to edit it all the time. Okay. I mean, I can leave some of it, maybe. I don't know. In the couch,
yeah.
When Elaine tosses overhand a glass bottle of grape juice, it makes no sense whatsoever.
No sense.
Nobody would do that, let alone Elaine.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And on this issue, there can be no debate.
Hello. All right, I'm not sure which episode in season 6, but...
Hello is a classic episode also, actually.
All right, so you want to do the kiss hello? We could do the kiss hello.
No. I was talking about in season 9.
Oh, Shmoopy. Yeah. Shmoopy. Yeah. Okay.
No. I you promised me season 5.
You're not getting season 5 at this point. You want the wife? Right. You want the one with
With the Courtney lookalike? Cox? Wasn't that the that's the debut of season 6 or no, that's the finale of season 5, right?
No, it's not a finale. It's in like 2 weeks. You want Courtney Cox?
Oh, Courtney Cox with the laundry. Oh no, I thought you meant when George is dating the girl who looks just like Jerry and then Jerry's going to get married to Janine Garofalo.
No, yeah, that's a season finale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not for a long time. That's season finale, right. Season 7.
All right, so let's actually, before we get to this week's games, I need to go on a little bit of a rant here. We were going to record the podcast yesterday, and just as we were about to begin, a headline popped up on ESPN.com, and the headline was, Griffey Hoffman among newcomers on Hall of Fame ballot. You and I are both, you know, big Hall of Fame guys, in baseball especially, but you know, really in every sport. And a couple of years ago, you gave me the idea. I went ahead, and of course, you can do this because you know 5 years in advance who's going to be on the ballot. I went ahead and made my ballot for every single year up until 2018, which is the year at which, you know, I could make a ballot at that point. Now, I guess I could make one for 2019 as well, but I haven't done that yet. And as I'm sure you can imagine, this headline really annoyed me that they headlined this year's class with Griffey, of course, who's deserved, but then Hoffman is number two. But then, and this is where things get really bad. I clicked on the link on ESPN, and it's I'm not blaming ESPN. It's an Associated Press article, and here's the first paragraph: Ken Griffey Jr., Trevor Hoffman are among 50 newcomers. ... David Eckstein, Troy Glaus, Mike Hampton, Mike Lowell, and Billy Wagner also among the first time players eligible.
It's a career achievement. If you're in the league for 10 years and you weren't horrible, they let you on the ballot.
Hold on. Okay, so then you don't understand why I'm so pissed off here. The reason I'm so pissed off is it's bad, and this year's class has, in my opinion, two no doubt gotta be in their Hall of Famers. And one of them is not Hoffman. So I'm annoyed that the other one is not in the headline. But then
You're talking about my beloved Mike Piazza.
I'm talking about the newcomers.
Oh, who's Piazza, the second newcomer?
Well, that's what I'm going to get to in a second. Not only do they not mention him in the headline, but then in the next paragraph, they start with David fucking Eckstein, as well as a bunch of other scrubs, and they still don't mention Jim Edmonds.
Yeah, Edmonds is going to get maximum 18% this season.
Edmonds is not going to be in the Hall of Fame.
No, he's not going to come close.
Because so much of his value was his elite defense.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
no, Hall of Fame doesn't really account for that.
Exactly. And again, it's always ironic to me that the people who claim that they care about playing small ball.
It's ironic really that you're saying it's ironic when Alanis Morissette is doing a huge media tour.
I'm not on top of Alanis Morissette. But, you know, David Eckstein obviously is a joke, and it's insulting that he's even mentioned here. Although, look, there are worse guys on the ballot this year. Christian Guzman, Brad Ausmus, Benji Molina, Bob Howry, Damaso Marte. Yeah, I'm not going to keep Russ Springer. I have Russ Springer dead last on this year's ballot, 43rd.
Listen to the war of Edmonds. 5.6, 5, 3.6, 4.7. 1 year got hurt the whole year. Then 6.3, 5.8, 6.7, 6.0, 7.2, 4.4.
So the way that we can do that,
he had an 11-year prime, but he missed one of those years due to injury.
Yeah. So, you know, his career WAR is 60, which, and actually let's compare his numbers to Piazza because his numbers are almost identical with Piazza's. Their career WAR is exactly the same. Piazza's at 59, Edmonds is at 60. Their WAR 7, which means.
Yeah, but first of all, but WAR is a cumulative stat. Catchers aren't supposed to accumulate numbers because their careers end so fast. So
yeah, I know, but look, there's a difference. First of all, they're both at defensive positions. Piazza was terrible.
But one doesn't take years off your career.
Yeah, but Edmonds also was one of the best defensive players in the game, and Piazza was a terrible defensive player, but still had significant value because he was at a defensive position. But I'm saying, just looking at the numbers for a second, just because I thought it was illustrative how similar they are. Mm-hmm. So their WAR is almost identical. Their WAR 7, which means take the best 7 years of their career, their prime, as it were, also identical. They're both at 43. Their JAWS, and JAWS is a number that was come up with where basically it's a combination of longevity and peak.
Yeah, go.
Yeah, it's basically longevity and peak, and it was a number that was put together that basically analyzes sort of the best way to look at a Hall of Famer, because some people prefer peak and some people prefer longevity. So JAWS combines the two, and their JAWS, again, identical. Piazza's at 51.1, Jim Edmonds is at 51.4. And so those are sort of like, you know, the advanced stats. They're very, very similar. And when we look at their traditional stats, they both played within 100 games of each other, within 50 at-bats of each other, and their numbers are very similar. You know, within 20 home runs, you know, all the numbers are very similar. Their on-base percentage, 377 versus 376. identical. You know, their OPS again within 15 points of each other. So these are guys who put up basically identical numbers over their careers. And again, one of them was an 8-time Gold Glover at center field, a defensive position. The other was at even the most premium position defensively on the field. And so, you know, Jim Edmonds to me is a definite Hall of Famer.
Okay.
And if you're going to say that he's not, fine. But to not even mention him in a paragraph in which you have Eckstein and Troy Glaus. And,
listen, you're trying to get those clicks. Jim Edmonds isn't bringing a single click.
And Troy Glaus.
I'll make a prediction. Griffey's obviously getting in this year. Piazza's obviously getting in this year. And then Bagwell's going to come super close because there's really, you know, people like to, you know, the smart writers have been writing 10 names. And now that a lot of the logjam is cleared, I think Bagwell gets really close if he doesn't get in. Reigns is really gonna get close, but not close enough. He's not going to get in. Lester's is next year, and then after that, you know, Schilling is probably going to stuck in the 40s.
Reigns has 6 years. Reigns has 6 years left.
No, it's 10. They moved it from 15 to 10 this year.
Oh yeah, that's correct.
So he's done. He's done because he's not going to be able. There's too many people who will never vote for him. But Hoffman's going to get close. I'm not 100% sure Hoffman will get in, but if he doesn't, he's going to get incredibly close. He might get in his first ballot.
All right. So I agree with you in the first part. I have Griffey and Piazza's definites this year. I have Bagwell is on the borderline. I could see him going either way if he doesn't.
He'll probably do what Piazza. He had 55, which is about what Piazza had last year. So he'll probably jump from 55 to like 68, 70.
Yeah, I think he'll be even closer. I think Bagwell's going to be in the 70s. I think he's going to be really close. And if he misses, he'll definitely make it next year, of course.
All right. But let's wrap this up. Baseball talk up.
Sure. So I'm surprised
you didn't talk about the Timberwolves almost blowing a 4,000 point lead last night.
Yeah, I watched that entire game. That was a tremendous. Well, let me just finish.
What would you have done? What would you have done if the Timberwolves had blown that game? Never. Would you ever watch sports again?
Well, for those who aren't keeping up to date on the Timberwolves, they were in Atlanta. Atlanta, you know, on a 7-game winning streak, the best team in the Eastern Conference at home. And the Wolves had a 34-point lead. The biggest blown lead in NBA history is 36. So this would have been the third biggest, I think. And Atlanta came all the way back, took the lead in the last 2 minutes. And then the Wolves scored 11 straight points to end the game, and they won. And it was really quite an impressive
performance. Hold on, I think there's a phone call from the 1800s on your phone line.
Yeah. The previous game they played in Chicago, another Eastern Conference playoff team. And they shut the Bulls out 9-0 in overtime. I had never heard of an overtime shutout before. And now this game, they end on an 11-0 run. And it's exciting. Wiggins just dominated. He scored the last 7 points. Karl-Anthony Towns had 3 blocks in the last 37 seconds of the game. Those two are just very, very exciting to watch. All right. But to come back to my, we were distracted from football with baseball and then distracted from baseball with basketball. The other thing I just want to bring up here, you said that you think Trevor Hoffman's going to come very close. So this year on my ballot, I have 9 guys who absolutely no doubt deserve to be in. And then I have 10 guys in category 2, which are guys that I could see going either way. You know, I might not vote for them, but you know, I can see an argument for them. In the past couple of years, the reason I wouldn't have voted for them is just because, as you said, there was such a logjam and you're capped at 10 votes. But this year, I only have 9 of the definites. So I'm not sure which of the 10 I'd vote for. But dead last on that list, which means number 19 overall, is where I have Trevor Hoffman. I don't think Trevor Hoffman should be in the Hall of Fame. I know that he eventually will be, but I want to compare him to another guy on the ballot.
He probably will be this year, and if not, for sure next year.
All right. Well, so let's compare him to another guy on this list who I think is better than him and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame ahead of him and probably will never make the Hall of Fame. And that's Billy Wagner, who was your beloved Met for a few years.
No, he was on the Mets. He wasn't beloved.
Well, he was very good for the Mets.
Yeah.
When the Mets were a very good team.
Yeah. We never really embraced Billy.
All right. So, you know, their numbers, Wagner and Hoffman, are identical. Their WAR, identical. Their WAR 7, identical. Their JAWS, identical. I mean, literally, these numbers are identical. You know, Hoffman obviously has 600 saves, and Wagner has 400, which is why Hoffman's going to be in the Hall of Fame and Wagner's not.
He allowed 13 runs in 11 2/3 playoff innings, Billy Wagner.
Okay, so you're saying so he was bad in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Hoffman wasn't good in the playoffs either, though, was he?
Yeah, same numbers as the rest of his career.
So Hoffman, you know, played a little bit longer than Wagner, but even though Hoffman, you know, Hoffman pitched about almost 200 more innings, Wagner had more strikeouts, and Wagner, here's the thing, Wagner had a much lower ERA, more than half a run lower, a much lower WHIP, Even though Hoffman is the one who pitched in a pitcher's park for most of his career versus Wagner, who pitched in hitter's parks actually in Houston mostly. Then that's why when we look at their xFIP, for example, there's a dramatic difference. Wagner's xFIP is 276. Hoffman's xFIP is 378, over a run better. They both made 7 All-Star games, so it's not like, you know, Wagner was ignored during his career. But there is not a single point during their career when you would rather have had Hoffman than Wagner. Every single year, Wagner was a better player than Hoffman. And it's because Hoffman was a closer for 3 or 4 extra seasons, instead of being a setup man. And so he got extra saves that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame and Billy Wagner's not. And I think that's unfair.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Last baseball one, since we're on the topic. Can we pour one out for Alan Trammell? 15th year on the ballot. He's a no doubt should be Hall of Famer. He's got over 70 WAR at an up the middle position. He was, you know, one of the best players in baseball in the 80s. And he's not going to make the Hall of Fame for some silly reason.
You could pour out whatever you want for Alan Trammell. What about the Twins making a big signing yesterday?
I don't know what to say. I think the reason for excitement is because the Pirates signed the Korean shortstop. What's his name again? Kim, I think. Yeah. Right. And he put up the similar sort of arcade numbers in the Korean League that Park did.
Young Ho Kang.
Yeah. And so he put up similar ridiculous comical numbers, like 1100 OPS. And then he came this year. But of course, he's up the middle as opposed to first baseman. So he's a lot of defensive value. And then he had an OPS over 800 this year in the National League, which is very good. So it's unfair to compare a Korean first baseman in 2015 to a Japanese shortstop in 2011. But the Twins have only made one previous foray into the Asian market. And it went so badly with Nishioka that Twins fans are a little hesitant. And also, first base and corner outfield is the Twins' least need. I mean, they have way too many guys there. Maurer's at first, and Sano is at DH.
Can't they frame Maurer for a murder?
Look, I'm not a Maurer hater. The guy suffered, you know, repeated concussions, and it destroyed his career. And it's sad because, you know, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer through age 30, and now his career is done, and he's not even going to make the Hall of Fame. I don't think he's going to have the cumulative numbers to get there.
Oh, no, he's not making the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, his WAR is still like 45. So if you put together 4 or 5 decent years at first base.
Well, he's not going to be. First of all, he's not going to do that. Second of all.
Well, that's the point, yeah.
I mean, he shouldn't even be on the field anymore.
Yeah, it's very sad. Although I think his wins probability added was still second on the team this year. He hit very well with runners in scoring position. But anyways, yeah, so let's get back to football. We discussed our number 16 coach who's on a bye this week. Let's get to our number 15 coach. And, you know, there's a lot of good games this week. None of them are at 1 p.m. The 1 p.m. games are a wasteland, but the 4 p.m. games and the Sunday nighter and the Thursday game are all very good, I think. And one of those 4 p.m. games has our 15th ranked coach, and that's Mike Zimmer of the 6-2 Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, you know, I really liked watching the Vikings and Rams. That was really, you know, the death match between the team that I've been talking about all year on the podcast, the Rams, and your favorite team. The Rams really acquitted themselves nicely, but they're in such a bad spot in the NFC West now. Like, they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to beat Seattle again. They're going to have to, you know, well, they're going to have to get very lucky.
They won at Arizona, right?
Yeah, right. They have Arizona again.
Yeah.
I'm not betting on them making the playoffs, but you know, we'll talk about them in Chicago in a second.
Yeah, they're going to
lose
the
time. We're talking about the Vikings first, right?
Yes.
So yeah, this is a really good game because it's a team that's basically like the all offense team in the league right now versus the best defense right now. So,
well, I think the Broncos are better defense than the Vikings.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. But, and you know, the Patriots defense might even be better also, honestly. But the
Vikings defense has been very good.
Yeah, very good defense against a team that has been basically unstoppable on offense, but really has a good front seven and no secondary. So I don't think you're going to be able to punish them if is Teddy, what are his chances of playing right now? Zero?
No, they say he's playing.
Oh, so they say he's playing. So if Teddy's fine, I don't know. This is a good test for him because if he can't shred this defense, you know, I'm going to start having more doubts about him. I don't know. I feel like we need to know more about Teddy Ballgame at this point. Like, is he at a certain point? Is this all he is?
I mean, he's still 22 years old, so I would say no. You know, look at all the other young quarterbacks in the league.
Been a lot of young quarterbacks who've been this bad in their second year but ended up being great?
But what do you mean this bad?
Like this mediocre.
A lot of
QBs like Peyton Manning struggle in their first season.
He's better than Andrew Luck this year, you know.
Well, Andrew Luck is playing on like, you know, one rib.
He's top 10 in the league in QBR. Right, he's top 5 in the league. He's top 5 in the league in accuracy.
Can we stop talking about QBR?
Okay, he's top five.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, you watch him play, and he's literally human garbage, and he's throwing to two great receivers, and his QBR is like second in the NFL right now.
All right, well, but you know, Teddy's not throwing to great receivers. He's running for his life.
He's not throwing great receivers. Accuracy. I don't know. That Stephon Diggs is like the next Jerry Rice.
Yeah, he's pretty good, but that's about all they have. Let's talk about Mike Zimmer as a coach for a second. And actually, let's take a step back and talk about Greg Williams. So Bountygate, nationally, I think, is seen as one of the first examples of Roger Goodell's idiocy and overreach. And he suspended a bunch of guys way too broadly. And Paul Tagliabue had to come in and rescue him and reverse a bunch of those suspensions.
Well, do you think Peyton shouldn't have been suspended?
Well, I'm just saying, so I'm about to get to it. In Minnesota, this is seen completely differently than the rest of the country. In Minnesota, and my dad openly said, my dad says,
and you're saying because they knocked out Brett Favre.
Well, hold on. The Saints are my dad's most hated team, more hated than the Packers, more hated than the Bears. My dad despises the Saints. And my dad is representative of the average Vikings fan in that
regard. Dad didn't happen to like hang a sign in Alabama this weekend, did he?
No, but I won't answer that. Katrina was a tragedy and it affected us all in different ways. But in Minnesota, Bountygate and the New Orleans Saints of 2009 are seen as the greatest cheaters in the history of sport. To recap, Greg Williams had a specific bounty against Brett Favre in that game. They had multiple late hits against Brett Favre, but the most infuriating part, and the NFL does this from time to time, and you know, so do other sports, where after the game, they'll come out and announce the calls that went wrong.
Yeah.
The NFL announced after that game that on a Favre intercept, and remember, this is the game that the Vikings lost in overtime, even though they outgained the Saints by 300 yards because they had five turnovers, and they had 12 men on the field when they were lining up for a game-winning field goal in regulation, and then Favre threw an interception on the next play, and of course, they lost in overtime without ever touching the ball, which led the NFL to change their overtime rules. Brett Favre threw an interception in that game, took a late hit, which was uncalled, and the NFL said later in the week that that should have been a 15-yard penalty, and the Vikings should have got the ball back in automatic first down. So it's not just that Greg Williams...
They would have been able to kick a field goal at that point and win the game.
They would have won the game, yeah. And actually, because I was so depressed after the game, when I first heard that story, I didn't hear about it that week. When I heard about it was about 6 months later. I was in my in-laws' house in the summer watching the NFL Network, and they had this show which was sort of like pop-up video for classic football games.
Sure.
So they'd show the game and do pop-ups, and they did a pop-up after a hit, after the hit on Favre, and they said after the game, a week after the game, the NFL announced that this should have been and I didn't realize that until that point. And this is like 6 months later, and the Saints are Super Bowl champions, and I almost had a heart attack. It was very upsetting. But so the point is that Greg Williams, who was suspended from the league, but now is back in St. Louis, he really is persona non grata in Minnesota. And then in this week's game, they took multiple late hits on Teddy. On the drive previous to the drive in which he left on a concussion, they had a third and long in which they went for Teddy's knees, and it was an incomplete pass, and the Vikings had to punt. And that one was not called, and the Vikings were completely apoplectic about that one. And the announcer said that maybe he was outside the pocket, and if he's outside the pocket, he's a runner, not a passer, but you're still not allowed to go over his knees. That's clipping, isn't it? You know. So I don't understand why that wasn't a penalty. And then on the next drive, there's the play we all saw where Teddy had slid, he had given himself up, and the guy elbowed him in the head. And whether on that specific play he was attempting to injure him or not, we can't know.
Well, he's friends with him, so we're going to say he was.
No, he's not friends with him. Teddy denied that, okay?
Are you serious?
That was...
He said their parents are friends.
He said their parents know each other. They live in the same area. They play Teddy against each other
first
in high
of all,
school.
Teddy has a huge concussion, so he doesn't know who's his friend right now.
Yeah. That,
you can't defense, have it both ways.
Yeah, his defense is that they were friends, and that has been a very Rams-friendly perspective, let's say. But certainly the point is that Greg Williams encourages a team to play dirty and to play, you know, at the very least to play on the edge. And the NFL didn't even suspend the guy for that hit, which is shameful. He'll get a fine, but he should be suspended. Greg Williams should be strung up in the town square. And Mike Zimmer, to his credit, he knows enough about sort of the Vikings history with Greg Williams that even though he was obviously nowhere near the Vikings in 2009, in the post-game press conference, he was going on and on about how dirty Greg Williams is and how, you know, if they weren't at a game, they would have gotten into a fight. And then he really started subtweeting. He talked about how the Vikings are the classiest team in the league. They have the fewest penalties on the season. You know, just a couple of years post sex boat, all of a sudden Vikings are on their high horse.
Yeah. I mean, so class, like you're not classy by having the least penalties. You have to try harder. You shouldn't have the least penalties in the league.
Well, usually good defenses have a lot of penalties, you know, like Seattle, for example, Baltimore, they're very aggressive. So the fact that the Vikings defense is this good with no penalties is pretty impressive. But the best part about this, and the reason that Mike Zimmer is shooting at my coaching rankings, is at the end of the game, he walked right past Jeff Fisher. And, you know, that's what Minnesotans wanted to see.
But what I saw, and everyone knows that Greg Williams is a monster, but what I saw on social media...
He has a frosted tip.
People in the league who don't like Jeff Fisher seem to, like, who aren't, like, you know, in Jeff Fisher's corner or whatever, seem to hate him. Like, he has a lot of haters out there, Jeff Fisher.
Ronnie Harrison, your former colleague on Sunday Night Football.
I would say co-worker.
Yeah. He has a reputation for, you know, being a dirty player. And yet, he just ripped into Jeff Fisher, and he said he wasn't blaming Greg Williams. He was blaming Jeff Fisher. He said Jeff Fisher's always been a dirty guy, and, you know, this is just classic Jeff Fisher behavior. Jeff Fisher likes to injure people, and he laughs when they get injured. I mean, he was really throwing Fisher under the bus on national TV in a way that you never see guys do.
How would he know that? He was never on a Fisher team.
No, he got injured in a game on which Jeff Fisher was laughing and high-fiving when Harrison was injured.
Wow.
That's what Harrison.
To be fair, they were probably high fiving because they knew they weren't going to get injured by Rodney Harrison's head on.
Yeah, I don't know if Harrison is the right one to complain about these things, but it is certainly Zimmer as a coach. I have him moving up the ranks among sort of the young unproven coaches. The only guy we have higher on this list is Quinn, and we might need to revise that one.
But I want to see Zimmer in a big game. But I'm liking what I see so far. He did a great job of having the players back. Even if he doesn't believe a word of what he said, it's important to, you know, just like the, you know, the Missouri coach this week when Missouri was going to boycott. It doesn't matter what he thinks. He just wants to play the game. He could care less, I'm sure. But you have to have your players back, or else you're going to lose them, you know, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
So good job by Zimmer.
And whatever you think of Teddy, the gap between Teddy and Sean Hill is bigger than the gap between Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, Sean Hill couldn't get anything done.
That's ridiculous.
Because you also have to remember that this is an offensive line that's in shambles. Teddy's been under pressure more than any quarterback in the league. And so he runs and creates time and creates play.
Sean Hill is faster than Teddy Bridgewater, though.
No, he's not. What?
Sean Hill
can't move.
You mean because he's old?
For whatever reason, he can't move. I watched that game, and they were completely helpless on offense once Bridgewater went out of the game. And St. Louis didn't even have that great of a pass rush. You know, I think Quinn was out of the game, but you know,
the numbers don't show. I thought Hill was a better runner than the numbers seemed to show that he was. Although he did once have a 40-yard run.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty immobile, but I could be wrong. All right, so that's a big game we have at 4:00.
How's Sean Hill at 35 still quarterback in the league? Good for him.
Well, backup quarterback, best gig in sports. And then we have a number 14 next on our coaches list. We're going to stay in that same division, the AFC West. And this is we have the number 14 coach, Gary Kubiak, and the number 12 coach in Andy Reid playing in this game, Casey at Denver.
Yeah. Is that a one in front of Andy Reid's number? Or is that a three in front of his number?
Yeah. I don't understand your hate for Andy Reid. I had him at number seven.
Ridiculous.
And you had him at number 18.
Listen, lots of coaches went to the Super Bowl once, Chester. Half of them just got fired in the last week.
Went to the Super Bowl.
Why is he better than Wiz and Hunter Caldwell?
Because Philadelphia was consistently good for years and years and years.
They had an amazing team.
Hold on. And then he comes to Kansas City, and they immediately become a playoff team after sucking. Like, they immediately become a playoff team, and, you know, 11-5 year after year. And this year, they're 3-5, and people have sort of forgotten about them. But they have like a plus 37 scoring differential. The last time we saw them, they won by 5 touchdowns. They only lost to the Broncos the first time because of a fluke play. I think this game at Denver is a real toss up. I'd certainly rather have Reid as
coach. Yeah, I mean, Denver's not good enough that, I'm gonna say they're gonna blow anybody out.
The last week we said they're the second best team in the league. I mean, we can't be flip flopping that much from week to week.
No, because they were winning close games. I mean, I'm not saying that Denver's not good. I'm just saying that their offense hasn't shown the ability to blow anybody out right now.
I mean, they blew out the Packers a week ago. I think that Reid, obviously, he has a huge flaw, which is clock management. But it's a flaw for most coaches in the league. And I think he's so good at everything else he does. And his track record speaks for itself. And this is a big game, Casey, at Denver. If Casey wins, I think they're solidly back in that conversation for the AFC wild card. And again, they played neck and neck the first time. So I think this is going to be a good game.
Okay, I agree. It'll be a good game.
All right. So that's our 14 coaches, Kubiak. Our 12 coaches, Andy Reid. Right between the number 13 is Ron Rivera. Riverboat Ron. Talk about a guy whose reputation has improved over the years.
Yeah, I mean, their team is winning. You know, he's winning with, you know, he's winning the same way the Colts are not winning. You know, that's not really fair because their defense is actually good. But, I mean, there's so many holes on this Panthers team. That, you know, are you in the Cam should be an MVP candidate bandwagon or no?
Most definitely not.
Well, I mean, obviously, Brady should be a unanimous MVP right now. Brady's playing a different sport than everybody else.
So here's the thing. We tend, and you know, this is a constant frustration that I've expressed many times in the past. We give too much credit to quarterbacks for their team's wins and losses. And so because Cam's team is 8-0, we say,
Did you see the meme that had Newton and Kaepernick's numbers side by side and they're very similar?
Yeah. Well, I didn't need that meme because I have my, you know, my weekly updated Chester quarterback ratings.
You don't even need a meme.
Yeah, but even after he had a fantastic game against the Packers, I have Cam as the 15th best quarterback in the NFL this year, one spot ahead of Marcus Mariota. Then what I thought of in all this conversation about how he's an MVP, you know what I hearken back to? The 2003 MVP race. Do you remember the 2003 MVP race?
No, tell me about it.
2003, we had Peyton Manning and Steve McNair, the late great Steve McNair, sharing an MVP. Peyton was clearly the best quarterback in football. Statistically, he was clearly the best quarterback in football, but McNair led his team to the same 12-4 record, and so he got a lot of credit there, even though his numbers weren't as good. I actually had McNair on my fantasy team in 2003 and rode him to a title. So he was pretty good, and he was like Cam in the fact that he didn't have as good passing numbers, but also he could use his legs quite a bit. So I thought that this was similar to that year, and you know, Brady should be the MVP, but Cam might sneak in and get consideration the same way that McNair did that year. But then I went and actually looked at my 2003 Chester QBR rankings.
Oh my God, yeah. And you should call it something other than QBR.
Well, no, I just call it Chester, really. Okay. The Chester. So the Chester, as I said, Peyton Manning was the best quarterback in the league. His Chester was 94.3. Mm-hmm. He had 29 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, you know, great number, over 4,000 yards. This isn't a different era. But number two in the league, by a huge margin, was none other than Steve McNair. McNair actually led the NFL in quarterback rating. He had a 24-7 touchdown interception ratio, and then he had another four touchdowns on the ground. His Chester, his Chester rating was 92.8, which was just behind Peyton, and nobody else, you know, was above 90. So his numbers actually were closer to Peyton's than I realized, and he was by far the second best quarterback in the league that year.
Okay.
And so that's why I think it's actually a disservice to Steve McNair to compare this year to that year, because that year, Peyton was clearly the best, but McNair was actually a pretty close second. Whereas this year, you know, Brady's at the top, obviously. And then after Brady, you know, we have Andy Dalton and Carson Palmer and Aaron Rodgers and even Derek Carr, frankly, and a whole bunch of other quarterbacks before we get to Cam Newton. So
who would be your runner-up? Obviously, Brady's the MVP. Who would be your number two right now? Doesn't have to be a quarterback.
Well, my number two quarterback is Andy Dalton.
That team would be 6-2 with Sean Hill at quarterback, though. So I don't know if he's the MVP.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows? Like the Patriots could be 6-2 with Sean Hill at quarterback also. Who knows?
No, I don't think so.
Brady's been very good. Look, they went 11-5 that one year, of course, with Matt Castle. It's hard to know to who gets the credit. But, and also, frankly, MVP in the NFL, and the reason I don't make charts for MVP in the NFL the way I do in baseball and basketball is because how do you compare, you know, position against position? We end up voting for quarterbacks just because quarterback's the most valuable position in sports. I really have a hard time knowing. So at least I'll say in my quarterback rankings, I have Dalton second, Palmer third, Aaron Rodgers fourth. Dalton and Palmer obviously have a ton of weapons around them. But, you know, so does Brady, although his offensive line has been banged up, and now he loses Deion Lewis, so we'll see what Brady does going forward. But Brady's definitely the MVP at this point in the season, there's no question.
Yeah, it's not even worth discussing further. What's next?
Yeah. All right. So we have Carolina. We have Ron Rivera as the number 13 coach in the league, although, again, I'll point out he's another guy who I had much higher than you, but that our cumulative ranking is 13. 12, as we said, is Andy Reid because of the big disparity between us. So now let's get to 11. 11 on our list is Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's a guy who you had way higher than I did. You know, people are very polarized on Chip Kelly, obviously.
Yeah, I just feel like I need to see a little bit more for good or bad from Chip Kelly because he really, I think we're learning now between...
He had Vic who got injured and then he went to Foles.
Right, Vic, Foles.
Then he had Foles who got injured.
Sanchez and Bradford. I mean, he's never had like a top 25 quarterback, so I'm not ready to kill him.
Was Foles good or not?
Look at Foles. I mean, you G-chatted me on Sunday and said something like Foles is like the worst quarterback you've ever seen.
Well, the Rams offense. Well, no. What I said is that the Rams have, and the reason that I think talk of the Rams as a playoff team is a bit short-sighted is because the Rams have the worst offense in the NFC. Their offense is basically give it to Gurley, give it to Gurley, give it to Gurley, end around to Tavon Austin, give it to Gurley, give it to Gurley, end around to Tavon Austin.
You've got a drop by Jared Cook or Tavon Austin.
All right, okay, and then a play action, you know, and then they throw it to Jared Cook who drops it. But Nick Foles is very bad. So look, maybe Chip Kelly hasn't had a quarterback, but Chip Kelly's also handpicked his quarterback, right?
Yeah, but he's handpicked. That's like you telling your son that he handpicked his Christmas present.
No, 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 no.
but no, you got from the dollar store. And it's because I picked a broken toy car. Because the other option was the broken doll. Like,
he could have tried to make the move to get Mariota. He chose not to. He gave up a boatload, including a second round. He gave up a second round draft pick and Foles, who had, you know, people thought highly of in the league.
Okay, that's not his coaching acumen, though. That's a GM move.
Remember, Sam Bradford's the same guy who, well, no, but it's, okay, fine. Well, then combined as a coach.
You could fire him as a general manager and the coach. That doesn't mean he's a bad coach because he wanted this quarterback. The quarterback isn't good. That's not.
He handpicked the guy and then the guy put up.
Okay, but he's not. But first of all, he handpicked him over Ryan Fitzpatrick and Gus Frat. Like, he didn't have a lot of options, but then he
put up arcade numbers in the preseason, and everybody, you know, we had Shamir Seidman on here, our Eagles guest, who guaranteed
the Eagles. I spent $33 on Nelson Aguilar in my draft.
Wait, do you remember when Shamir guaranteed 500 points for the Eagles this year?
He meant like over the next two seasons they would score 500 points.
Yeah, well, at the halfway mark,
or maybe there'd be 500 points in their games.
At the halfway mark, they don't even have 200. So they're on pace for, you know, well under 400.
Leaving it late, as the British soccer announcer would say.
Yeah. Bradford also comically turned down an extension right before the season started because after his, you know, dynamite numbers in the preseason, he said, oh, I'm too good for this crappy extension. Good job, Bradford.
Is he a free agent after this year?
Yeah, he's going to be a backup somewhere. He stinks. And Chip Kelly might not be in the NFL, but you know, this week they're playing Miami.
No, I think they give him one more year. I think it would be crazy not to give him another year. The problem is they keep winning and they're not going to get a quarterback again.
It's between them and the Giants for that division. And the Cowboys, you know, they just have lost.
They just needed to win one of these games. Really, I guess two, because they this week also.
Yeah, and they were close every time, but they didn't get enough done. Let's move on in our coach rankings. Number 10, we're in the top 10. And we have John Fox. John Fox with a big win last night at San Diego.
Yeah, I really didn't think Chicago was going to win that game. I mean, now it looks like you look at the Chargers like, okay, they're 2-7, they're awful, but I kind of don't know where that came from.
Yeah, they've been close, other than the Vikings game where they got destroyed. They've been close in every game. They were close at Green Bay. You know, they played Cincinnati reasonably close. You know, they're sort of like the Ravens this year. They just keep losing heartbreakers.
Yeah.
And they have no receivers left.
I mean, if you look at we talked about how hard the Bears' schedule was going to be coming into the season. You know, they lost a close game to Green Bay and then got annihilated by Arizona and Seattle. But since then, the results, you know, could stack up with, you know, anyone outside the top five in the league. Beating Oakland, winning in KC, who you think is decent, losing an overtime game in Detroit, losing by a field goal to the Vikings and winning in San Diego.
So can they win at St. Louis this week?
They can move the ball well enough. And I like what I saw out of Langford. Like, they could play well enough to keep it close with St. Louis, but they're worse than St. Louis. I don't think they're going to win. And they're not, their season's over even at 3-5, because even if they win this game, they have to play Denver and Green Bay.
They're not making the playoffs. But there are, as Mike Tirico mentioned repeatedly last night, they're a rebuilding team. I don't think they're trying to make the playoffs right away.
Well, everyone's trying to make the playoffs.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't think they have expectations.
There's not going to be any fire.
They were trading guys away a couple weeks ago until this little
week. Totally.
Yeah.
Fox is a good coach and he deserves to, you know, be right where he is.
By the way, we forgot to pick winners in the games we discussed already. So Minnesota at Oakland. What do you see happening in that
game? I'm going to pick Oakland.
Yeah. You know, it's fair. I'm going to pick the Vikings.
I don't think you're ready for just how good this offense is.
You know,
Carr just playing so well, and a good offensive line almost always beats a good defensive line, and they have an amazing offensive line. So I don't think you're going to be able to get the Carr enough.
Yeah, I think it'll be a close game.
You're going to be able to move the ball on them. Like, I'm not saying that. You know,
I think the Vikings are going to win this game, and then after that, I think they're going to, you know, they'll get to 7-2, and then I think they're going to lose at home to the Packers and start a little losing streak, unfortunately. And I still think they're on the threshold of the playoffs just because their schedule gets really tough. But I said at a minimum they needed to be 6-3 before the Packers game, and ideally 7-2, and they've done that. But let's see if they can get one more there. KC at Denver, as I said, I think it's going to be close, but obviously we're both picking Denver.
Kind of liking this case. I'm not going to pick it, but now I'm sort of like, ooh, I'm going to pick Denver really low on my confidence pool.
Carolina at Tennessee. We both have Carolina, I assume.
Yeah.
And then Miami at Philly. I'm going to take Philly.
Say about Tennessee, like, Mariota might be really good.
Yeah. Well, he's had a couple good games. He's, you know, it's hard to say because they look so bad under Wisenhunt, and then all of a sudden they get Mike Mularkey shows up and they get a bump. But New Orleans stinks, and we'll get to New Orleans. So Miami at Philly, though. And I thought this one was a toss-up. I thought Philly would be favored by 3.5, and I was way off. You won this one. They're favored by 6.5. So you have Philly winning at home, I assume?
I think Miami's definitely going to play hard under Campbell. I just don't know. There's just something missing, and it's not, you look position by position, and it's, they don't look like they're really missing anything, you know, other than the offensive line's disappointed, but.
Well, Tannehill's definitely taken a step back.
Yeah, Tannehill's taken a step back partially because the offensive line's been bad.
Well, they've lost Wake.
And they lost Wake, yeah. Line. So I'll pick the Eagles.
Yeah, and by the way, I need to mention Akiva with a big come from behind win this week.
I would say a controversial win in our spread picking.
Well, you got both the Sunday nighter and the Monday nighter to take a lead on me 9-8, and you won the week. Your second win of the year, so congrats on that. I think you're saying controversial because I gave you credit for the Jets, even though you accidentally picked the Bills to be favored by 3. Is that right? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but your intent was clearly for the Jets. Although in picking winners and losers last week, I beat you again. I went 8-5. You went 7-6.
Yeah, I went 4-9 in confidence. So even worse.
You were felled by the same Miami Dolphins. You know, you're really good.
They've really been my Achilles heel this season.
Yeah, I think you need to pick a new Super Bowl winner. All right, another Achilles heel of yours, I think, is Dan Quinn. You have absolutely loved Dan Quinn all season.
No, I'm off Dan Quinn. I would throw if that was my team. I don't think I would watch this week because it just shows such a basic.
They're on a bye, fortunately.
Yeah, so. That's exactly what I would do. I would take a bye. It just shows such a basic like lack of understanding because there's no way you could justify kicking that field goal.
It was a very strange decision.
Because who cares
if they fail?
Who cares if you fail? You have the team pinned down to 2. Quarterbacks are so apt to make bad decisions. Oh, it's just horrible.
It was Mike Smithian.
It's funny because it's the main reason Smith got fired is because he looks so clueless in game management. And you know, Quinn, you've heard nothing but good things about him. And now it's like, oh, he's a fraud. He knows nothing.
Well, look, when they were 6-0, we joked about the fact that they'd be favored in every remaining game except for at Carolina.
I hope they lose every remaining game.
Well, they have been favored in the last
Quinn,
games.
You know what? If Quinn comes out this week, and I haven't seen anything, and says, I made a mistake.
No, he didn't.
Well, then he's an idiot.
He said something about how he had confidence in his defense to stop them. But that makes no sense. Because if you have confidence in your defense to stop them, then you have confidence in your defense to stop them when they have the ball on the 1 yard line after you pin them, after you fail to score a touchdown, right?
Really one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
It makes no sense. And I think Bill Simmons said this. You don't see those. You see bad calls in 2015, but you don't see calls that are that bad.
Yeah, I think their win percentage went from 35% to 17% the second they kicked the field goal.
Very odd. Yeah, and then they never got the ball back. So Dan Quinn, we have a number 9 in our coaching rankings, but we made these when they were 6-0 or 6-1. So he might be on his way down. As we said, Atlanta on a bye this week. So is San Francisco, who gets to celebrate that win, and San Diego as well. And did you see Philip Rivers' postgame comments last night?
No, I didn't.
He openly gave up on the season. He said, "We have nothing left to play for but pride. But I have a lot of pride. I'm going to keep trying."
And what about your 8 children? You don't have to. Why don't you play one game for each of them?
And also, I'm the guy before this loss last night, obviously, when they were 2-6, I'm the guy who said, oh, they're going to finish 8-8 and they'll be in the playoff race still for a wild card. Now, of course, I've abandoned that. They're done now.
So now are they, you know, is Mike McCoy maybe going to get fired?
Well, you know, we'll see how much pride they play for. If they finish 4-12, you know, I don't think he's coming back. If they get to 7-9, I think he probably will. But let's get to third.
You know, you go 9-7 twice. And then you go 6-10. It's tough to fire the coach. Yeah, if they go 3-13.
Well, they're moving to a new city. They might get new uniforms. I mean, there'll be a whole new squad.
Oh, new uniforms. You got to fire your coach if you're getting new uniforms. I agree. Got to fire.
Speaking of uniforms, by the way, having watched that Timberwolves Hawks game last night, the Atlanta Hawks with the worst jerseys in professional sports, right?
They're pretty ugly. Everything about the Hawks are the Panthers of the NBA.
But I like the Hawks. I like their old school logo. You know, the Pac-Man with the hawk in it.
Yeah, that's fine.
The logo's great, but the uniforms are just a disaster. All right, let's get to the third. As I said, there's 3 big 4 p.m. games today. And the third one is game of the week on the Patriots go to their hated New York Giants. The undefeated Patriots, obviously they're heavy favorites in New York. And this is also the number 8 coach. So our next coach on our list, Tom Coughlin. I was speaking to super fan Robbie Weisenfeld last night, and we might bring him on at the end of this podcast, depending on how our time is going. And we were talking about Tom Coughlin. And what I said is, first of all, guess how old Tom Coughlin is?
70.
So yeah, he's 69. There's no other coach in the league within 5 years of him.
Right, and that's Belichick, I think, who's second.
Yeah, well, so Pete Carroll is 64. Belichick is 63.
Carroll's the youngest 64 in the world, though.
Yeah, that really shocked me. But
I mean, listen, the Jets coach in 1994 already. So
those are the only three coaches in the league above 60. Doesn't it surprise you that a guy like Jeff Fisher or Marvin Lewis is still in his 50s?
Well, Fisher was hired really young, but I am surprised he's not 60 years old. He's probably got to be 59 or 58.
He's 57. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So you have Coughlin, who's 5 years older than any other coach in the league. And obviously he looks it because, especially in cold weather games, his entire face turns, you know, frostbitten red and he looks like a disaster.
I mean, he looks so much older than all these other guys.
Yeah, you had him at number 6. So you still think he's an elite coach. I had him at number 13.
I gave him a lifetime achievement award, I think.
Well, look, obviously that's what the Giants have done. The Giants are never going to fire him. But in today's day and age where NFL coaches work 20 hours a day and sleep on the couch,
in this economy.
Well, frankly, it's a conversation about president as well. When we talk about, you know, they talked about it with John McCain in 2008, and they've talked about it with Hillary Clinton.
Are you being ageist
this year? Well, yeah, is it an ageist thing? But I think that NFL head coaches get even less sleep. Obviously, they have more pressure with the president, but I think the NFL head coach gets even less sleep than the president does.
What about Donald Trump? You think Donald Trump could be president? You didn't mention. You only mentioned Hillary Clinton. How much older is Trump?
Yeah, but Trump doesn't care. So,
I don't think you have to worry about Trump overworking himself in the White House.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just pretend we lived in a hypothetical world where Donald Trump got elected president. And by the way, this is another
Trump's topic older than Clinton. By the way, he's 1946 and Clinton's 47.
Well, here's another topic. Yeah, but he hasn't worked as hard in his life. I don't think so. You know, he's got more energy there. He's a young.
No, Trump. Whatever. I mean, I'm sure he's worked hard.
Yeah, but I was going to say, let's pretend...
You know how many hours a day you film The Apprentice? It's a lot.
Yeah. Let's pretend for a second that Donald Trump got elected president. I think he wouldn't accept it. I think he would just take the fact that he won to hold that over people. Like, he would never want to be president.
Right, that's a baller move, because everyone gets to be president, and then if you're a horrible president, you become like a laughing stock like George W. Bush. What a baller move to hold it. Well, that's why, you know, like...
That's what Jesse Ventura should have done when he got elected governor of Minnesota.
Right.
That was like Trump.
The thing about Jesse Ventura, he was like 100 times crazier than Trump. Like, Donald Trump is so much more normal than Jesse Ventura. There's no... Jesse Ventura, we shouldn't even say this because he'll actually sue you.
Well, but the difference is that getting elected the governor is very different than getting elected the president.
Oh, of course. But I'm saying like Ventura...
But Ventura's right move should have been the mic drop. He should have said, "I got elected." Okay, I'm not going to do a Ventura impression, but he's got this very deep baritone with a Minnesota accent.
Everyone knows. Everyone does a Ventura impression. Okay.
Yeah. He should have done, you know, "I got elected to show that both parties are corrupt and no good and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm going back to my farm," or, you know, mic drop. You know, you people.
Yeah, that would have been an awesome move. Because who cares? Like, what was he, governor for one term? I'm sure it went fine. And then, like, no one remembers. Who cares?
It did not go so fine, which is why he only went for one term. It was kind of a disaster, but you know, you get what you pay for when you elect a guy like Jesse Ventura. So, but back to Tom Coughlin. So yeah, you gave him the Career Achievement Award. So what super fan Robbie Weisenfeld said on our conversation last night is he basically called Coughlin the Eli Manning of NFL head coaches, in that he said his highs are really high, his lows are really low, but he can outcoach anyone in the league and he can be outcoached by anyone in the league. And what I just think is that being an NFL head coach is not just about the 3 hours on Sunday. It's about the 80 hours or 90 hours or 120 hours during the week. And I just don't know if a 69-year-old guy can do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's in the Paterno slot. Like, the offense has really, you know, jumped a lot under, what's his name, McAfee, since Kelvin Gilbride got fired. The defense clearly has...
Since Odell Beckham Jr. started jumping all over the place.
Basically. The defense has been a train wreck this season, most of the games. You can be a coach... If you have good assistants, then you can be a 12-hour, you know, a spur. What the knock on Steve Spurrier, if you remember this, was when he was one of the first guys to really come from a big time college job. And the knock was he wasn't a hard worker in college. He just, you know, he had good players and good recruiting.
Yeah, but in college, you can get away with that. You can't get away with that in the NFL, which is why Spurrier failed.
Right. So to me, Coughlin's the type of guy who's such a hard worker. I do think he can do it.
And this is a good segue, by the way, because last week we discussed, you know, you brought up Kevin Sumlin, I think, and David Shaw, I think you said.
Oh, yeah, David Shaw is my number one.
Yeah, as potential NFL head coaches in the college ranks. Mm-hmm. And then superfan Robbie sent us a detailed email listing a number of guys there who he thought, you know, college guys who could have a chance in the NFL. And he actually put together his top five list. And again, maybe we'll get to that at the end of this podcast. But so we have the number 8 coach in this matchup this week. And then, of course, on the other side, we have the number 1 coach in the league. You know, Belichick's still the king, obviously. You know, he made a mistake at the end of the Super Bowl, but it did not come back to bite him. And in all respects, he's obviously the best coach in football.
Best coach ever.
In any sport or in football, you mean?
I think now looking back that they went 11-5 with Castle makes me believe that, like, because if in the tug of war of it's like Brady would be pulling the strings for Belichick versus Belichick pulling the strings for Brady, I think like Brady, you know, Belichick wins like 10-9 in the 12th round just because they went 11-5 with Castle. So I think that the best coach in the history of sports, I don't know. I'd have to really, like, I don't know, you know, maybe yeah, some
it's,
great
it's
hockey
such a hard
coach.
It's,
but
it's
yeah, really he's definitely the best coach of any sport in our lifetime and the best NFL coach ever.
Yeah, and you're a Spurs fan, so you get to see Pop. But
yeah, well, listen, he never took Duncan out for, you know, Belichick never took Duncan out with 5 seconds to go against the Heat.
Well, but I think what he did was worse at the end of the Super Bowl, you know, letting all that time click off without calling a timeout. But, you know, we discussed that one in the preseason. All right. So the big question is, can the Giants end the undefeated season for the Pats? And remember, the Giants are the ones who ended the Broncos undefeated season.
By the way, can I just say one thing about the coaches? And it's been such an epidemic of the coaches not calling timeout. I think what happens is that the coaches have so much to do. And the game gets away from them, right? And they're subbing in players, they're calling the plays. And so when you're supposed to call timeout and you're thinking about it for 3 seconds, 4 seconds, 5 seconds, and you haven't made the decision, at a certain point you say, oh, I'm going to look like an idiot for wasting the 8 seconds, so I'm just never going to call it. And they almost save face by like cutting off their 32-second nose despite their 8-second face. Do you follow? I think that's what they do every single time if you watch closely. It's just like, oh, I don't want the announcer saying, why did he wait, you know, leave 14 seconds taking off the clock when the announcer is too dumb to call them. If I ever stop watching football, by the way, it won't be because of the concussions or because of domestic violence. It will 100% be because of the terrible announcing and the awful coaching decisions. No question.
It's just, we have to be near.
Is there one decent announcer besides Michaels and Collinsworth? And Burkhardt is okay. Ian Eagle is good. Oh, Gus Johnson doesn't announce the NFL. He doesn't announce the NFL.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, but I'm saying I would like him to.
Of course, like obviously, like, Gus Johnson should do all.
I like Kevin Harlan.
Thursday,
also.
Sunday, and Monday Night Football. Yeah.
I like Kevin Harlan as well.
Yeah, no, Harlan has a good voice. I don't know if he's like a tactical genius, but yeah, Harlan is.
Well,
Harlan,
look, I'm loyal to him because I grew up. He was the Timberwolves radio guy.
Yeah, he gets really into the game. So, I do like Harlan. Ian Eagle's good. The problem is Dan Fouts is a blithering idiot. It's just shocking how bad. You know, I want to do. The problem is that I have I'm going to write another Medium article like I did with Seinfeld. I want to watch one Sunday or during the week afterwards, every single telecast and just tear it apart afterwards. It's a big undertaking.
Yeah.
I feel like I might do it, though.
It's not enjoyable. But so here's the big question. Can the Giants end the undefeated season for the Patriots?
Yeah, I think they will. I feel like they're in their heads too much.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, I have the Pats winning this one. I think that at Denver is the chance for the New England loss. But,
yeah, that's definitely a possible loss also. But I just feel like the Giants are in the Patriots' heads so much. They're going to be able to move the ball on them. I feel like they're going to throw the kitchen sink. This is their... You know, even bigger than any divisional game right now. To me, it's as interesting a game as you could have on the schedule. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah. You know, it's the same time as the Vikings Raiders game. And again, we have three great games at 4 p.m. and nothing at 1 p.m. It's really a wasteland.
Right, and usually, if you're a guy like me or you, usually have your team play at 1, but your team's playing at 4, so it's, and my team's playing on Thursday.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to one of those terrible 1 p.m. games. And this was the game that you were most off in guessing the spread. And this is the next coach on our list, number 7, Mike McCarthy, and the Packers home against Detroit. You only had the Packers favored by 7 on this game, on this one. I mean, this has got to be double digits at least.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah. You know, the last time we saw the Lions, they lost by 35. Aaron Rodgers is coming home. They've lost 2 in a row. I think it's a conservative estimate that he's going to have 400 yards and 12 touchdowns in this game.
I mean, there's something wrong with them if he doesn't destroy the Lions, right?
Yeah, but if he doesn't destroy the Lions, we'll talk about that, you know, after the game. You actually mentioned that our
and
Packers
by the way,
guessed,
before we bury Aaron Rodgers' career, he has 19 touchdowns and 3 interceptions this season. He's okay.
He had a bad game against the Broncos, but he had a good game at least, you know, down the stretch against Carolina on Sunday until that late pick.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, our Packers guest from the preseason sent you a DM the other day to make note of the fact that he so far predicted all 8 other games correctly in the preseason. He said they'd start 6-0. He said they'd lose the next 2. So Packers,
you have all his picks. Can we track that from now on?
Yeah, we don't need to. The Packers don't need to worry too much. You know, if they lose this one, which they're not going to, they'd have to worry. But either way, they're going into Minnesota, and the winner of that game, no matter what happens this week, the winner of that game is coming out in the lead of that division. So, you know, the Packers have an easy win this game, and then a big game next week. Next on the list on our coaches' power rankings at number six is Sean Payton. Payton's a guy who I think is leaving New Orleans at the end of this year. I think, you know, he's still a good coach, obviously.
If you're hiring Sean Payton next year, or you need a better defensive coordinator than Rob Ryan. You need a real defensive guru. And Payton, you know, he's basically at this point the Rex Ryan of offense. Like, he can deal with the defense. And I think Rex Ryan's overrated as a defensive mind, but he can deal with the offense, and you're fine. You're great. But defense, he's just proven at this point. He's totally clueless. Like, even the Super Bowl year, they had a bad defense that was just playmaking. And that's what you need when you have a team that scores 35 points a game. You just get a couple of interceptions and they can't match you point for point down the stretch. Like, their defense, they have no talent and they have no scheme, and they're embarrassing on defense.
Yeah. They're such a hard team to pick because they were so bad the first few weeks. Then they won three in a row. Although in hindsight, you know, they beat terrible Atlanta. They beat terrible Indy. And then they have an easy game at home against Tennessee and they lose. They blow it. And so now they're going to Washington. I think New Orleans and Washington are fairly similar teams. You know, 3-5, 4-5. They're both in sort of that mediocre level of the NFC. So I figured at home, Washington would be a favorite of about 2.5 points. Instead, New Orleans is favored.
Yeah.
Look, Washington looked bad this week, but they were playing the Patriots. New Orleans looked bad. They were playing Tennessee.
Yeah, I think Washington has some life in them still. So I agree. Washington right now should be considered a better team than the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, I'm picking Washington to win this game.
It's in Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, so I don't understand why the Saints are favored in that game. That really doesn't make sense to me. But we're obviously picking the Packers to win, right?
We didn't mention that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course. Okay, so now we have our number five coach and our number four coach, and now we're really getting to the elite level of coaches. And they're playing each other on what's just going to be a massive, massive Sunday Night Football game. I'm really excited for this one. Seattle has really been disappointing all season. You know, here's their chance to get things right in the division. We have Pete Carroll as the number four coach. And I'll note that we have Bruce Arians at number five. Everyone else in the top eight has won a Super Bowl.
Wow.
Bruce, yeah. So it's, you know, Belichick, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Carroll, Peyton, McCarthy, Coughlin. That's basically all the Super Bowl winners of the past dozen years.
McCarthy should probably be 32nd right now.
Yeah, and the only guy in that list who doesn't have a Super Bowl ring is Bruce Arians. But, you know, we saw what he did when he replaced Pagano in Indianapolis.
Wait, he doesn't have one until 3 months from now when he gets one.
Yeah, so you did pick the Cardinals to go to the Super Bowl.
Since the Dolphins aren't going to be there, they're obviously going to win it. There's not even...
They're probably the second best team in the NFC right now after Carolina, right?
No, they're better than Carolina.
Well, okay, I'm glad you said that, because I actually, in my power rankings, I have them number three, and I have Carolina number four.
Yeah, they're better.
But everybody else is annoying.
They're just more well-rounded. Listen, you bet on the Panthers, and then in the NFC Championship game, or in the divisional playoffs, they're down seven, and you're waiting on Ted Ginn to try and catch a deep pass, Jericho Cottry's corpse to try and stretch and get a first down. You're going to be regretting it.
Yeah.
Also, you have a running quarterback who's more susceptible to being injured as the season goes on. So who knows if Cam's even playing the second week.
But the biggest thing about the Cardinals is Carson Palmer, because if he goes down, they're done.
Oh, obviously. The Cardinals are as good. Who's backing up Palmer this year? Because they had to make the situation a little better.
Oh, no. They still have Drew Stanton.
That's bad.
That's not, yeah. That's
well, didn't he get hurt? Like, weren't they? And they have Matt Barkley.
Yeah, but I mean, Stan technically is number two in the depth chart. I don't know who would play, but, you know, let's remember last year he came in for the Cardinals and he wasn't terrible. It was really when Stan went down that things got, you know.
He was a game manager. I mean, he's terrible, but he's not yeah, like.
But they're good enough around him.
He can, in theory, win a game, whereas Lindley couldn't win a game.
Yeah, so this is a really tough game to predict. I mean, Seattle's really been underwhelming a lot of this season. Which way are you going on this one? I'm giving Seattle a slight edge.
Yeah, I give the home team a little bit of it. I think Arizona's a little better, but Seattle is so desperate for this win.
By the way, can we just point out, if Seattle loses this game, they're not making the playoffs.
If Seattle loses this game, they're not good enough to make the playoffs, I think. It's just because it's so hard, like they could go 8-8 still, but I just think it's so...
So
the,
in
the
my
road is so tough.
In my latest update of playoff teams in the NFC, mm-hmm. I have the Packers climbing back on top to 13-3. I have Carolina and Arizona at 2-3, each of them at 12-4, but Carolina winning the tiebreaker. I have the Eagles winning that crappy division at 9-7. And then I have Atlanta and the Vikings at 10-6 in the wild card. So right now I have Seattle out of the playoffs.
Well, you have Atlanta as the sixth seed?
Yeah, because, I mean, they're 6-3. I think they can eat up four more wins.
I'd rather see Seattle or St. Louis in that spot, but I understand.
Oh, I would. Seattle and St. Louis are better than Atlanta, but Atlanta's schedule is so easy. Again, they're going to be favored in every remaining game except for the Panthers game.
Yeah.
So they got to scratch out four wins, right? I mean, who knows? They keep losing, so we'll have to wait and see about that one. But yeah, so we're both going to pick Seattle, but it's really a must win for Seattle because if they drop to under 500, and also, you know, St. Louis could probably win this week, and then they would, and they have the tiebreaker right now over Seattle having won, and so it's a divisional game. It's a big game for the Seahawks. Okay. So that's 5-4, and now we get back to our ugly 1 p.m. games, and that includes the number three coach in the NFL, John Harbaugh. Baltimore, not looking like it this year, 2-7, but they're hosting Jacksonville. And, you know, as we said, Baltimore's not dead yet. And if they can get a win here, you know, hanging around, who knows what happens at the end of the season if 8-8 or 9-7 can crawl into a wild.
AFC. The same thing we thought about San Diego. If Baltimore gets off to a good start here, I agree. They get a win here, and they will, then don't count them out. I won't count out the Ravens until they get their eighth loss. I'm not counting them out of the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, Patriots fans are very worried about them. If they were to somehow sneak in as a sixth seed and then they go on the road and, you know, they beat Denver in the first round or something like that, and then they come to New England, you know, all of a sudden in the AFC Championship game, and Pats fans would be very worried about an 8-8 Ravens team, who would be 10-8 at that point, I guess. All right. Let's get to another terrible AFC game. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. I don't know. Do we know yet if it's Johnny Football or Josh McCown playing?
Doesn't matter.
We don't care.
It truly doesn't matter.
Even with Landry Jones?
Doesn't matter. The Steelers are just so... I mean, at this point, they've shown they could just throw the ball to Brown and he'll make plays. Like, you don't barely need a quarter. They need a quarterback less than any team, even without, you know, Bell. I mean, they have a very competent running back in D'Angelo Williams. You know, the Browns are minus 70 already in point differential. Their defense has been as bad as any defense in the league.
They've been very close in a lot of games.
They've allowed 250 points already.
Yeah, but now it's Landry Jones, and D'Angelo Williams might be injured also, actually.
Really?
You know, I think Pittsburgh's going to win, but I think it's going to be a really close game.
No, I don't think it's going to be close. Pittsburgh blows them out.
All right, and then the number one coach, of course, we already said is Belichick, so let's rip through. We got three more games here. We have, in the last of the awful 1 p.m. games, Dallas at Tampa. Dallas has looked... They've stayed close, and Matt Castle actually had a decent game last week against the Eagles, but ultimately they lost. This game doesn't really have any consequences. Maybe the winner has a chance to stick around for another week or two, but the loser season is definitely over. And I think Tampa puts Dallas out of its misery.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for Dallas to outscore Tampa, who's really been putting up points.
And then the question is, do they even bring back Romo then?
Yeah,
if they're 2-8,
I mean, if he's not healthy, don't bring him back. But if he's healthy, you're not going to not bring him out because you're bad. Don't bring him back because he's not healthy.
Yeah. Does their coach have a job next year?
He's done nothing wrong this year. I mean, I think he's done a really good coaching job.
Cowboys.
You know, they shouldn't be winning these games, and they're almost winning them. I think you don't blow it up right now. That you hope that you get another year of elite play out of their offensive line and out of like some of their defense. You get a solid play. To me, this team, they blew a goal. This is like the Jets in 1999, like after Elway retires, right? And they're the preseason favorite, and Testaverde tears his ACL in the first quarter of the first game.
Yeah.
To me, it's if Romo doesn't go down right now, we're talking about them as, you know, they might only be like 6-2 or something, but we're talking about them as the most dangerous team in the NFC. For sure, the team the Patriots would fear most coming out of the NFC, other than maybe Green Bay if they get it together. Like, this was their year, and they blew it.
Okay. All right. So let's move to the Thursday nighter now. The Bills at the Jets.
Really working backwards.
Another big divisional matchup here. The Trolltastic Rex Ryan comes to the Meadowlands, where he's sure to be booed. Speaking of Rex Ryan the Troll, we had a voicemail question from Harold Rosengarten, who was one of our preseason Jets fans. Let's take a listen.
As a Jets fan, I always kind of liked when Rex Ryan would needle other teams by naming former players of other teams' captains. But now that he's named IK, and I cannot pronounce his last name, so I'm not going to try, a captain against the Jets, somehow it feels a little different. Am I wrong in this, or am I just being too sensitive for my own team?
All right, so Akiva, what do you think about that? You're the Jets fan. Do you take offense to what Rex did, or do you think, no, you know?
I think it's like a little funny, but I also think, like, you know, if his quarterback was Michael Vick and, you know, Todd Bowles was a pit bull owner, does that mean, like, Michael Vick now gets to be the guy who comes out?
No, because that's very different, because Michael Vick committed a crime and went to jail. IK did something.
He could have gone to jail.
Every single team has tons of fights in the preseason.
Really? When was the last time your team's quarterback missed the first 6 weeks?
The Cowboys were celebrating that, you know, posting on Twitter and Vine Dez Bryant getting in fights with guys in the preseason. Yeah, the only reason this one became a bigger story is because Geno broke his jaw, but that worked out to the Jets' benefit. So
yes. So maybe the Jets should make IK Inupali captain.
Yeah. Harold said to me yesterday, he said, you know, there's a lot of people taking umbrage about this on Twitter. And I said, Harold, the purpose of Twitter is for people to say there's nothing that somebody won't take umbrage for.
The backup name for Twitter was Umbrage.
Yeah.
I think Harold also told me that he thinks the Bills are going to beat the Jets by 30. The Jets are so banged up right now. They have shown for 8, 9, 10 years now that they can't do anything when Nick Mangold leaves the game. They never have a backup center who can make them, you know, look like a competent offensive line. And it's the wrong team to go up against. They're playing against a team that has a running quarterback, which they can't stop with their slow linebackers. And another thing they can't stop is pass receiving running backs. And that's what the Bills have. So I think the Bills destroy the Jets, unfortunately, this week.
Wow. I don't think Rex.
By the way, if people want to leave a voicemail like Harold, how can they do that?
Harold just sent it to me on WhatsApp. But, you know, you can record yourself an audio on WhatsApp, on Twitter. We're both on Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, we will play it. If you write a voicemail about anything, we will play your voicemail.
Yeah, yes, you will.
All right. So do you think the Bills are going to win?
Yeah, I don't think Rex Ryan is going to win at the Jets. I can't imagine. The Jets players, 90% of them were Rex Ryan players also. I think they're fired up, not because they hate him, but because they, you know, they want to beat him. It's a huge divisional matchup. I mean, the loser of this game is in huge trouble making the playoffs.
Well, the Jets aren't in huge trouble if they lose. The Bills are in bigger trouble because they have the extra loss.
Yeah.
Or one less win, rather.
Well, but no, because if the Jets lose, they still have to go to Buffalo later in the season. Right.
Yeah, but every other than that and the Patriots, every other game they have is basically easy. I mean, Giants aren't so... Yeah, I take it back. They still have to play the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Patriots, so they do need to win this game.
I have the Bills winning this one. And so let's wrap up with the last game of the week, the Monday Nighter, Houston at Cincinnati, another Bill Simmons special. This is a terrible, terrible game. Although, you know...
Yeah, but before this season, this wasn't...
Yeah, these teams have matched up in the playoffs, you know, a couple of times, and Houston came out on top both times. You beat me by half a point for the week in guessing the spreads, because I guessed 13 on this when I was 2 points off, and you guessed 9.5. You were only 1.5 points off. 11 to me is too low. 9.5 is certainly too low.
Ugh. Yeah, you could make a case for the spread being super high because we've seen
since he's really, really good. Yeah, I mean, Houston will get some garbage points maybe, but you know, Cleveland couldn't even manage that in the second half last week, and you know, Cincinnati now will have 11 days off to prepare for this one.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, Bill O'Brien's probably been polishing his resume this week.
Tough times. So I'm glad we have three games on which we disagree, and that's good because that means that we're guaranteed to not have a tie in terms of guessing winners and losers. And just as a recap, those three games are the 4 p.m. matchups. I have the Vikings and Patriots winning on the road. You have the Raiders and Giants winning at home. And then
what if there's a tie in one of those games? Then we could still
fine. That's true. If we got a tie and then we split on our other teams.
I lawyered you.
Yeah, you did. And then we have Buffalo and the Jets.
Is that what you do all day? You just like say annoying things like, what if there's a tie?
that's what being a lawyer is. Exactly. All right, Akiva. So there you have it. Our week 10 podcast in the books. We promised earlier in the podcast that we would have superfan Robbie on to discuss the college coaches who deserve to replace one of these crappy NFL coaches. But tragedy struck the Weisenfeld family today as Robbie's beloved pet Boston Terrier of 15 years had to be put down.
You know the dog's name or no?
No, but I know that it's 15 years old and it's a Boston Terrier. I feel like that's a lot of information.
That's enough. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he wants to like keep it out of the press, so maybe he shouldn't say it.
But yeah, the name. So, you know, condolences to superfan Robbie and his whole family in these trying times. This dog is actually a twin, and the other dog they had to put down just a couple of weeks ago. So it's a rough time over.
Oh, they went together at least. That's like an old married couple that goes at the same time.
I think that's the right way to look at it. So you know, if the Shiva period is over, we might have Robbie back next week to talk about who's replacing some of these fired coaches, and maybe we'll have another fired coach if we're lucky. But a big week 10 starting Thursday night for your Jets and then continuing late Sunday afternoon for my Vikings. So I will talk to you later, Akiva, but probably not tomorrow on the Seinfeld podcast, apparently.
Yeah, definitely not.
Okay, bye-bye.